and welcome to the local news roundup on The Point here on WCAI. I'm your host, Sean Corcoran. Joining me from the Cape Cod Times newsroom is Sean Driscoll. Hello, Sean.
Good morning, Sean.
Good morning to you. Thanks for joining me. And Sam Houghton is here in the WCAI Woods Hole studio. Sam is with the Mashpee Enterprise. Hello, Sam.
Morning.
Good morning to you. Sarah Brown will join us from the Vineyard Gazette, and George Brennan will join us from the Martha's Vineyard Times, Tim Wood from the Cape Cod Chronicle, Ed Miller from the Provincetown Banner as well. So a full show, lots of town meeting stuff to try to get to. I don't know if we can get to all of it, but let's start with some other stories. Sean Driscoll, the state continues to crack down on some doctors' prescription practices when it comes to opiates, and let's talk about a local doctor who's now it looks like his license has been indefinitely suspended.
That's right. This is Dr. Conrad Benoit, who has been his license had been suspended in 2016 on the heels of a police investigation into one of his patients, and now it's been indefinitely suspended, I guess, following a further investigation. But Dr. Benoit had been under investigation after one of his patients was found basically selling oxycodone pills. Was investigated for it off a prescription that he wrote. He wrote a prescription for 420 oxycodone pills for a cancer patient of this woman in Hyannis. And his son-in-law were found in a closed and sitting in their parked car outside a closed motel in West Yarmouth with just lapfuls of pills, you know, in their car. So the investigation led back to him, and his they had investigated him last year. Now his license is indefinitely suspended, although he could petition to have it returned to him at some point in the future.
And this was, I remember this doctor, he had actually spoken to a reporter kind of defending himself and talking about, look, these patients, cancer patients, they build up a tolerance to this medication. They need more of the medication. Isn't that right? And so also some defenders have reached out to the paper.
Yeah, and like you said, there have been some of his patients who have reached out saying that he's calling him caring and competent, and that now they've complained that they're having trouble getting the relief they need without his assistance. But I mean, obviously, the overprescription of opiates is a big issue right now, and especially with the heroin epidemic that we all know too much about, unfortunately. But he does have his defenders, and he has defended himself, as you said, saying that that these patients need these pills and they build up this tolerance. So he defends his practice, but it's worth noting that at the rate that he was writing these pills, that this woman who is not even 5 feet tall would have been taking 14 pills a day at the rate that he was writing them.
Okay. Let's move on to another story, Sean Driscoll. Graduation ceremony in the town of Falmouth. The senior class, members of the senior class there have advocated for moving that graduation in order to honor some classmates who passed away this year.
Right, that's right. Well, it started really, Owen Higgins and James Lavin, the two students who were killed in a car crash in December, were members of the football team that won the state championship this year. And although it has on this extra significance, there had apparently been talk even before that of wanting to move it to Fuller Field. But that's not going to be happening now, because the students who have been pushing for that said they're not going to continue to push for it because this administration has basically given them the message that it's not going to move, and they feel that there's no, there's no option for it at this point. So the students have decided not to continue to push forward on it.
Okay. Sean, we're going to see if we can work on your microphone there. We're going to go to Sam Houghton from the Mashpee Enterprise, who's joining me in the Woods Hole studio. Sam, you were able to go to Mashpee Town Meeting. We're going to talk a lot about town meeting this week. You were at Mashpee. A couple big ticket items there.
Yeah, I think the big one was the Quashnet Elementary School. The town has proposed paying for what's looking like a $10.5 million project through a debt exclusion, and they were hoping town meeting members would approve that, basically spending money outside of Proposition 2.5. Town meeting went along with it with very little discussion. There were some people saying, well, can we get together a maintenance program to make sure this doesn't happen again, that we kind of you know, down the road have to spend $20 million or $10 million on a renovation project.
Does that include the roof?
Yeah, it's the roof, windows, door, and soffit of the school.
Any discussion about possibly a new school rather than making repairs?
There was not that discussion. There was months ago talk of combining the two elementary schools. That was at the finance committee, but that has not gone anywhere.
Any other items beside the windows and roof? And
I think, you know, the interesting thing about town meetings as a reporter, I think as a town official too, is you never know which article is going to draw a lot of discussion.
Right.
And this one was one that was the town was hoping to put together, or I guess get an assistant town planner. And they're proposing, it was kind of interesting, they're proposing it as a full-time position, but with only $25,000. So a lot of people had a lot of questions. Well, why don't, you know, that's not really a full-time job. Anyways, it was the current town planner, Tom Fadal. He's going to retire in January. He's been there for 30 years. He's actually the only town planner the town's ever had. So they're hoping to get this assistant position in there for as kind of an intern. But that did pass, so.
Let's talk about the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe, which you also cover for the Mashpee Enterprise. A lot going on there. It looked like several months ago, it looked like the tribe was set to really move forward with their construction of a casino in Taunton. They'd put land into trust with the federal government, both in Taunton and in the town of Mashpee. Now that is completely up in the air.
Yeah, so the latest news, the federal government, the Department of the Interior, and the Justice Department had filed an appeal of kind of a lower case decision. And on Friday, they actually withdrew that appeal. So that does really throw into question what's going to happen next.
So the tribe had gone to court with the Interior Department,
right?
Because someone was questioning this land into trust process. The judge rules against the Interior and the tribe. And now the Interior is walking away from the appeal.
Right. I mean, there's still some hope for the tribe, though. They're on a separate case, what's called a remand. The judge in the lower court basically gave the Justice Department and the tribe kind of another chance to make their case, what some people have called kind of a mulligan, and that's
golf term, right?
It's a golf term. That's called the remand process, and actually the tribe has kind of submitted evidence for that, and we're going to hear no later than June 19th on that, and that's a big decision there. That'll really set the course, but at the same time, you know, even with the federal government dropping out of this appeal, the tribe seems very confident. They came out with a press release late last week basically saying, you know, we could start construction on this casino in Taunton by this summer. So,
wow. A lot at stake with casino land in Taunton, land in Mashpee as well. Yeah. They have a huge housing project they're hoping to do. That could be in jeopardy if this land is suddenly not in the federal trust.
Yeah, I mean, their whole hope for self-governance would, you know, is riding on this land and trust. So we'll see where it goes.
Sam Houghton of the Mashpee Enterprise. Thanks, Sam. Sean Driscoll is with us from the Cape Cod Times, but first let's go to the phone where Sarah Brown is joining us from the Vineyard Gazette. Hello, Sarah. Sarah,
Hello?
Are you there? Hey, there.
Hi.
So we've talked before about a debate on Martha's Vineyard when it comes to grass versus turf for playing fields. What's happening here?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, this has been an ongoing debate about, you know, everyone agrees that the fields at the high school are in pretty bad shape. Apparently, the track is so bad now, in such bad shape, that the track team can't use it anymore. So there's really a need to restore them, and a group called MB at Play had this proposal to raise, I think, eventually about $12 million to completely overhaul all the playing fields, starting with the track for $3.5 million with artificial turf. And that was agreed to by the high school committee, but proved to be really controversial with, you know, strong opinions on both sides. MB at Play and others said, you know, turf is the only material that will withstand the kind of use the fields get. And some athletes and their parents said that they preferred the turf, while others, including a group called Vineyard Earth for Grass Fields, had concerns about safety of the materials and the safety of the fields. So I think petitions were circulated on both sides, and this was headed for review next week at the Martha's Vineyard Commission as a development of regional impact. Huh. But then this week, a counterproposal was unveiled to the high school committee on Monday by the Vineyarders for Grass Fields, and they have come up with a counterproposal to the turf proposal. And they are proposing underwriting the cost of a new grass track and infield and upgrading actually all the playing fields on the vineyard with grass, buying new equipment. They're also proposing endowing like a permanent superintendent for the field. So it's a pretty detailed proposal. And the initial cost, I think, to upgrade the 12 fields is about $1.5 million, and that's all the fields on the island, $1.2 million. And they said they aim to raise $5 million total. So this could represent a pretty significant shift in direction. The hearing before the commission that was scheduled for next week has been postponed to let this new proposal be vetted and kind of play out. The high school committee scheduled a meeting for next Thursday to talk more about the plan on the table. And an MVA play said, you know, they're willing to step aside for now to allow this proposal to play out, and they said, you know, their main goal has been just to see the field, especially the track field, restored. So they're willing to see where this goes.
When you say safety concerns, is the concern about landing on the turf and bone breaks and such, or there's also been, I believe, some discussion around the country about health issues related to playing on turf?
I think a little bit of both, but I think a lot of the concerns that I've heard have been the materials used to make the fill, the turf material. There's definitely been both concerns raised, but I think it's been, you know, the material used, and also just having something that's synthetic and artificial instead of real grass is something I've also heard raised.
Any idea when this debate might be wrapped? I mean, eventually they have to make a decision, right?
They do. It's hard to tell. Their goal that they've said has been, as I said, the track team can't use the track right now. There have been hopes that something can be done before the spring 2018 sports season.
Right.
Of course, this still does have to go. It has to be approved by the high school committee, and they do have an agreement right now with MV at Play, but that includes an opt-out clause, so they would have to look at that agreement, perhaps make a new agreement with this new group. And then also it might still require review by the Martha's Vineyard Commission. So
It's
unclear exactly how long it would take. Certainly, I'm sure that because of the urgency, there's a chance that the groups could get together and try to fast track it.
Okay. Sarah Brown of the Vineyard Gazette, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's take a quick break. And Sean Driscoll is still with us from the Cape Cod Times newsroom. We'll speak with George Brennan from the Martha's Vineyard Times as well. Welcome back to the local news roundup on The Point here on WCAI. I'm your host, Sean Corcoran. Joining me from the Cape Cod Times newsroom is Sean Driscoll. Sean, we've been talking about this story in Orleans. It's interesting. They have these wires that cross a pond there, Cedar Pond, and for months and months they've been trying to figure out what to do about the birds that are roosting on the wires and with the excrement going into the water. What's going on there?
Well, as you had said, this has actually been going on now for almost 2 years that Eversource and Orleans have been in disagreement about the lines across Cedar Pond because the cormorants roost there and do what birds do, as we say. But now there had been a trial scheduled in Orleans District Court regarding an alleged violation of the some bylaws in the town. And
like water-related bylaws?
Right, exactly. So there seems to be an agreement in place. It's tentative still and it hasn't been approved, but that Eversource will move those lines from across the pond to adjacent to the pond so that the birdies will, if they continue to roost there, will not do their business in the pond, thereby polluting the pond.
And I know they were trying loud sounds to get rid of them. They were trying everything to get rid of them, and it seemed like the answer was always move the wires, but I guess it took a court case to make that happen.
Right, and I know that there had been discussion about burying them so that you wouldn't just move the problem to another area. That was one option, too, but it seems like that this is the direction that they're going and that tentatively you know, this will be the direction they head after that gets approved by all sides and by the judge.
Okay. Sean Driscoll, thank you. George Brennan is joining us on the phone from the Martha's Vineyard Times newsroom. Hello, George.
Good morning, Sean. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning. You were talking last week about Laura Marshard, who is an assistant district attorney with the Cape and Islands District Attorney's Office. She's been facing a disciplinary hearing this week. You previewed it last week. What happened at the hearing?
That's right. So there have been 2 days of hearings in Boston before the Massachusetts Board of Bar Overseers. And the first couple of days have sort of focused on setting the stage for the panel about what the vineyard is like. And also, the attorney for Laura Marshard has focused on these two defense attorneys here on the island, their brothers, Tim and Rob Moriarty. And she's kind of trying to paint them as the culprits here, you know, as any good defense attorney would do. She's trying to turn this around and make it look like this was some sort of vendetta by them.
Now, who judges? Are these judges? This is the Board of Bar Overseers. Are these state judges or are they attorneys themselves?
You know, I think they're attorneys themselves, and they sit on this panel, and there's a bar counsel who represents, you know, sort of the state's position on this, which is that Laura Marshard overstepped her bounds. You know, prosecutorial misconduct in the courtroom and how she handled these cases, and some of the evidence, not bringing the evidence forward that might have made defendants cases for them, you know, help them out.
Right. Held back evidence? Is that basically what it's coming down to?
Exactly. That's what the accusation is. And of course, you know, she's going to put on a vigorous defense here,
sure.
You know, to try to defend her her honor and her position. You know, there's discipline at stake here. You know, as I said last week, you know, this is rare for a prosecutor to be in this position. You know, you hear about other attorneys going before the Board of Bar Overseers from time to time, but in my experience, which is 30 years now in newspaper business and covering courts, this is the first time I can recall a prosecutor being brought before the Board of Bar Overseers.
And we should mention that the Cape and Islands District Attorney is fully supporting his assistant here.
Yeah, and in fact, he has been in Boston there in the room, you know, supporting her as well. So not only saying that he supports her, but also, you know, backing her up by being there in Boston.
Can we move on to another story? Adam Wilson is leaving his position. Is that right, in Aquinnah?
That's right. Adam Wilson has been the town administrator there for 6 years now, and he's leaving the position to take a job with one of the companies that's looking to put offshore wind farms off the coast of Martha's Vineyard, 15 miles off the coast. And his job that he's looking to take with them would have him being the island coordinator for them. They're going to set up some sort of a benefit fund, and he would be their liaison here on the island. Interestingly, this comes at a time of, you know, political intrigue in one of the state's tiniest towns. He is, even though he's leaving as town administrator, at the same time he's running for the Board of Assessors there. And there's this long-standing back and forth between the Board of Assessors and the Board of Selectmen in that town, where the Board of Selectmen wants to have some control, and they've put something on the town meeting warrant, which is coming up this week, to try and turn that position from elected to appointed. So a lot going on there, and not something that we can get into in great detail on the radio, but I encourage people to read my story about that on our website.
And that's George Brennan of the Martha's Vineyard Times. Thank you, George.
Thanks so much, Sean.
You're welcome. Sean Driscoll still with us from the Cape Cod Times. Sean, spot of good news here with the North Atlantic right whales. We know that they've been converging on Cape Cod Bay for food reasons. Now, I understand there were two whales that researchers had not seen in a while, and they were concerned about them.
That's right, and it's fascinating to me. But they spotted a right whale mother and calf this week. And the mother of the calf, known as just number 1515 in the New England Aquarium right whale records, hadn't been seen since 2009 and has been kind of seen infrequently by spotters since 1985. And the mother whale that they saw before this hadn't been seen for 14 years. So it's amazing to me that not only they haven't seen these whales in so long, but they can identify these whales with such precision, because it's not like they're wearing name tags, obviously. So it would be easier, probably. But
I think so.
Yeah, so they did spot a right whale mother and calf. That's the fifth pair of mothers and calves that they've seen so far this year. Three of them had been spotted down south off of Florida and Georgia, and now this is the second pair to be spotted east of Truro. Well, one was east of Truro. This most recent one was just east of Nantucket. So they're, of course, closely watching these because the population is in such dire straits. Just about 500 of them seem to be left, and it's the number of calves especially has dropped precipitously. There were 39 of them in 2009, and now this is just the fifth that they found this year. So good news to see even one of the few that we found so far to be able to spot another one off the Cape here.
Let's talk about what's happening on Martha's Vineyard again. There's been lots of discussion about mopeds. A lot of visitors will come and they'll rent mopeds when they get to the island, and maybe they don't have as much experience on those bikes. What's the latest?
Well, the Oak Bluffs Town Council, they're waiting at least another month. The selectmen are waiting at least another month to make a decision. The whole issue is that there are these, you know, just these three operations left, and they're all owned by basically the same, owned or co-owned by the same person. And there is a move to not to continue these licenses. But if that were to happen, the way that the bylaw is structured, that every time a license isn't renewed, they can't reissue that license to someone else. So effectively, they'd be outlawing mopeds in Oak Bluffs, which is a problem, the attorney general says, because it would, you know, you can't prohibit something that's legal, essentially. So
yeah, there's been some case law around that, too.
Right, yeah. Right. So they're waiting for a month right now, the selectmen to kind of consider their options. There's discussion about whether or not they can, they can make the business have a test track to give renters a chance to practice before they go out on the road, and what their other options might be short of just not renewing the licenses overall. So
yeah, it sounds like they had a bunch of regulations that they'd created in the past, and not all of them were quite being followed. So what can they kind of enforce now? But you may be right. Maybe it will be a year, Sean.
It could be. Every month they say it'll be a month, so okay. I'm not betting against anything right now.
Yeah, who knows? Okay, let's start in on some town meetings. We hit Mashpee already. We'll do the best we can. I don't think we can get to everything, but what can you tell me about Harwich?
Well, town meeting in Harwich approved spending more than $9 million on everyone's favorite phrase, the wastewater cleanup plan. The plan calls for sewering East Harwich and then pumping wastewater into Chatham's facility because they've got the capacity to handle it. Now, this $9 million is just part of the overall cost is $34 million. So this is a $9 million down payment on a much bigger project. And this is mostly going to pay for the biggest chunk is going to be for sewer design and then designing a connection to link the system into Chatham, and then payments to Chatham for treating the Harwich wastewater. But this is seems to be the cheaper and better option than taking a bunch of land to build a plant in East Harwich itself. That would take 10 acres, which on the Cape anywhere is a lot, but especially in East Harwich, it's a lot of land. And it would cost $15 million as much to spend. So this is seeming to be the option that they're headed towards.
I want to move on to Bourne. Anything else to say about Harwich, though?
No.
Okay.
That's the big one. They had some land sell-offs, but that was definitely the highlight, the big issue.
Big budget talks in Bourne. They're looking at about $62 million budget they needed to approve. That went through?
It did, yeah, and it also kept four firefighters on the roster that had been grant-funded. It includes.
Oh, that was a big issue. I remember that. They were real concerned about losing those firefighters.
That's right. And this grant is set to expire in December. And, of course, town budgets don't run out of calendar year. So they did have $114,000 in there to retain these four firefighters after that grant funding runs out. So that'll keep them on through June of 2018. And basically the cost of that was cheaper than paying for unemployment. And then the overtime there would result went from them not having these people on the staff. So that was in the budget and that passed. It also is bringing some positions back into town hall, which have been cut over the years. And the town administrator says that they're trying to kind of bring the town back into a healthier administrative position by doing this. One thing that did get pulled from the town budget was an assistant town administrator position, which Tom Guarino has been pushing for. But they may bring that back at fall town meeting, but that was a $120,000 chunk that was taken out before it ever got to town meeting.
A lot of town meetings talking about marijuana and the possibility of recreational marijuana in their towns. Bourne, they took a vote on that, right?
Yeah, they did. They approved a moratorium for retail marijuana shops until July of 2018, which has been a pretty familiar theme in towns around the Cape this year, giving a little bit of breathing room to sort of consider, you know, this, it's a new law, obviously, in a lot of towns. No one seems to know what the law is going to do. I mean, it's a lot of confusion right. about this across the state. So a lot of towns are giving themselves an extra year to take a breath and kind of see how things shake out. I mean, we don't even really know at the state who's going to be monitoring all this yet and who's going to be responsible for it. That seems to be a shifting thing as well. So Bourne did take that vote to hold off at least until July 2018 on that.
And let's try to squeeze in Eastham right now. What happened in Eastham? $27 million budget there.
That's right. And that was went through pretty quickly. It did increase again here for some fire positions. They're going to have a new deputy fire chief to help sort of bring the town that's supposed to help the town lower its insurance service organization rating, which in turn makes costs cheaper for insurance, makes everyone pay less insurance, home insurance.
Okay.
That was a sentence that I could not get out of my mouth.
That's okay.
And then also the capital plan included some items for first responders, including a power loading stretcher, which I didn't know was a thing, but that sounds pretty cool. $50,000, though, but it does help with moving patients in and out of rescue vehicles and could help decrease injuries among rescue workers trying to lift people in and out of ambulances. So that was something that was in there as well.
Okay. Let's go to the phone where Tim Wood is joining us from the Cape Cod Chronicle. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, thanks for holding. So Monomoy High School, there's a risk assessment. They're looking at the students and what students are up to. Is that what that's about?
Yeah. Now, 2 years ago, they conducted their first risk assessment survey at Monomoy High, and they just completed a second one. And the results of the new survey that were presented last week to the public and the school committee showed a decline in many risky behaviors, including use of tobacco and marijuana and alcohol, all of which fell below state averages, whereas in the previous survey 2 years ago, the percentage of kids engaging in those behaviors were above the state average. Use of hard drugs and sexual activity also fell below state averages in the latest survey. But one of the more significant findings is a big drop in the number of students reporting either attempting or considering suicide. In the last survey, that figure was more than double the state average, but it's fallen below the state average in the most recent survey. Now, the numbers are still a bit concerning, especially if you're a parent. More than 40 high school kids reported in the survey that they had attempted suicide in the past year. Now, this comes at a time when Monomoy administrators and other concerned folks in town are expressing concern over the Netflix series called 13 Reasons Why, which is about a teenager who commits suicide and leaves behind an audio tape explaining her reasons. Monomoy administrators sent a letter to parents last week expressing concern about the show and basically saying that they warn parents to, if their teens are watching the show, to monitor their reaction, watch it with them if possible, and certainly be available to talk about it afterwards. And this kind of echoes a concern that's been going on at the national level regarding this program as well. And now locally, the youth services librarian in Chatham at the Elders Library, Tammy DePasquale, she also expressed some concerns about it, and she is organizing a discussion of both the series and the book, which will happen on June 6th, and that's both for parents, community members, students, basically to just talk about the situation. And I think, you know, in light of this this risk assessment survey, the two sort of coincide in a fortuitous way, because the subject is out there, and it hopefully more people will discuss it and bring these issues to the fore. And now we have stories on both those issues in this week's paper and also on our website.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that show, 13 Reasons Why, until just a few weeks ago when someone mentioned it. And now I'm hearing about it everywhere, and parents are struggling, grappling with whether they should allow their kids to see that. So I'm glad you mentioned it. Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle, thank you.
Thank you, Sean.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, Sean Driscoll is still with us from the Cape Cod Times newsroom, and we'll speak with Ed Miller for the Provincetown Banner. Welcome back to the local news roundup on The Point here on WCAI. I'm your host, Sean Corcoran. Sean Driscoll is joining me from the Cape Cod Times newsroom. We're talking about town meetings this week. Sean, what happened in the town of Sandwich? They had some capital spending to consider.
They did. They had a $1.5 million capital plan that passed, and it included, with some debate, a $100,000 expense to purchase and install a portable bathhouse at Town Neck Beach. It seemed divided amongst the voters between being wasteful spending or a sound investment. And given the fact that they had spent so much money restoring the beach and preventing further erosion, $6 million worth of that, a lot of people said, what's another $100,000 to, you know, give something, you know, give tourists a little bit more comfort when they come there, and maybe spur some activity at restaurants and shops is a worthwhile investment. Although others said it was a little bit of pork barrel legislation, but it seemed to be a lot of talk. It really, budget itself went through pretty quickly, the capital spending, which included a new ambulance and some building repair. So, and then overall, the $72 million budget went through relatively unscathed, it seems.
Okay. Let's go to the phone, where Ed Miller is joining us from the Provincetown Banner. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Sean.
And, Ed, we were talking about town meeting. We have some other news stories, of course, but we're kind of focusing on what happened at town meeting. Maybe you can fill us in on what happened in Wellfleet. I know they were thinking a lot about immigrants' rights.
Well, that was one of the interesting articles on a very long warrant that made town meeting in Wellfleet last three nights, which I'm not sure that's ever happened before, at least not in the last several decades. One article had to do with declaring Wellfleet a safe community, which basically was about making a statement that all residents and visitors' civil liberties and human rights would be protected in Wellfleet, regardless of citizenship or immigration status. This is a non-binding resolution that was basically about a statement of principle relating to the nationwide debate that's going on about undocumented immigrants and so-called sanctuary cities. And a number of towns on the Cape have articles or have had articles like this on their warrants this year. The proponents of them say it's really not about sanctuary. As Mark Gabriel said in Wellfleet, this is not about granting asylum to felons and not about restraining ICE officers from doing their job. Basically, the article asks the selectmen to authorize town officials to refrain from using town funds or other resources for the enforcement of federal immigration laws unless presented with a criminal warrant or other evidence of probable cause. The idea is that enforcing federal immigration laws is really not the job of local police. Gabriel said, "We love our Wellfleet police just the way they are. and we want them to continue doing just what they're doing. Now, there was some concern in Wellfleet expressed by a couple of the selectmen that taking a vote like this could jeopardize federal funds that the town is hoping to get, in particular for the dredging of Wellfleet Harbor, a massive project that is estimated to cost perhaps up to $18 million. And there was a couple of selectmen said, we can't afford to jeopardize that money. But the vote went decisively the other way. As selectman Jerry Houck said, there are some things that are more important than dredging the harbor. He said, if people had spoken up during the Holocaust, maybe those things wouldn't have happened.
And you sent me a note saying that similar articles were approved this week in Eastham and Brewster and that Orleans will vote on this issue coming on Monday. Is that right?
That's right. I think Dennis also has approved a similar article.
And let's move on. A few other items that we wanted to get to in Provincetown and Truro.
Yes. Well, the big ticket item in Provincetown this year was building a new police station at a cost of around $8.6 million. And in this week's town election, that expenditure was overwhelmingly approved as a budget override, more than 2-1. That was it's been years now, that project in the works. Overrides were also approved in both Truro and Wellfleet. In Truro, the selectmen and other officials asked for a $465,000 budget override to pay for a whole variety of expenses for school, the public works department, etc., and that passed. And in Wellfleet, two budget overrides were approved, one for $147,000 to hire two new firefighters, paramedics, and one to borrow over $100,000 to pay the town's share of a feasibility study on building a new regional high school.
People were in a spending mood this week, I guess.
Well, there were concerns expressed in Wellfleet, sure, in particular, but the voters said, let's spend it.
All right. Ed Miller of the Provincetown Banner, thank you, Ed. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Okay. Sean Driscoll is with us from the Cape Cod Times newsroom. Let's stick with town meeting just a little bit longer, Sean, if you don't mind. Dennis voters also rejected a marijuana sales tax article, right?
Well, this is a little bit different from the other right, marijuana articles, but there was a petition. There was an article that would have directed the selectmen to petition the state for special legislation that would have allowed Dennis to impose a sales tax on medical marijuana, which is different than the recreational pot most of these other articles have been talking about. Medical marijuana, of course, was legalized before recreational marijuana, so the article would have sought a 5% tax on the medical marijuana sales. And that was not overwhelmingly, 176-83 against that article. The concern raised, of course, is that if you're going to tax medical marijuana, what's to stop us from then moving forward to tax other medicines that you're getting at the CVS? Statewide, medicines aren't taxed. So the odds of, I don't know, the odds of this passing would have been very good, even if it got to the state. But that was their marijuana-related item out in Dennis, and that did not pass.
So Dennis, obviously, is looking to open that medicinal marijuana location. Has that opened? Do we know where that stands? And not to put you on the spot.
I don't know. Unfortunately, I don't.
How can anyone know with what's happening at the state level when it comes to?
I know. It's so confusing that we all need to be on marijuana to understand what's going on with marijuana right now.
You think we'll have a better chance? Okay.
It might make more sense that way. I don't know.
Let's move on. Let's talk about the Cape Cod National Seashore superintendent there, a longtime superintendent, been very active. He's retiring.
That's right. George Price, his last day of work was this week. He's been there for 12 years at the Seashore, which is pretty long tenure, especially for someone in government service. They tend to move around a lot. But he is retiring. He spent his last day doing the end-to-end tour that he does a lot of times, crossing the borders of the Seashore through all six towns to sort of take a last look around. And there was a reception at the headquarters for him, and there will be something later this month a bigger event in Eastham, but he's decided to retire. He's been in Park Service since 1973, starting in New Jersey. He was in Lowell for a while and then Boston before coming out here in 2005. And he's certainly has a pretty good reputation in the community. I mean, there, you know, a lot of he does get into the communities a lot, and he's knows a lot of, takes care to know his employees' names and emphasize the importance of correct visitor information and held cookouts for staff and, really been an active part of that community. Wouldn't it be very easy for, someone in that position to just stay in your office and sort of send out memos? So he's had a good reputation of being out and about and really knowing the land out there in his time.
That profile of George Price was paired with another story about the Seashore Advisory Commission. This is a commission that basically advises the seashore, and there's a lot of issues. And I was really surprised. I don't know if you read this. You probably read this story, Sean. I don't know if you read it again in preparation, but it was really interesting. They've been told by the Trump administration basically to stop having meetings. It's a temporary, or they think it's a temporary halt on the advisory commission meetings. Do you know anything about this?
Well, I know about what you said on it, but he had just, I know that it was there's a transition obviously taking place in the federal government, and it seemed to take everyone really by surprise that the commission would be wouldn't be meeting until the Departments of Interior and National Park Service sort of settled their transition. And the commission plays a big role out there. It's and it's longstanding that they've been in existence for quite a while. So that really kind of took everyone by surprise, and that was sort of one of the last bits of bad news that George Price had to deliver before leaving, was that they wouldn't be meeting for indefinitely, really, until someone says otherwise. So they believe it'll be short term, but who knows?
The creation of the Seashore was very controversial at the time, back in the late 50s, early 60s. President Kennedy ended up, I think, getting that through, and this 9-member board was authorized in 1961. It was part of the creation of the Seashore to represent the towns that the Seashore, touches as part of that are within the park boundaries. So, we've seen it, stories you've covered and others at the Times have covered. They've played a big role. I think I remember the campground in the Seashore that was having some violations. They were stepping in there. They've also gotten a little bit political when it comes to the Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station. So I just from the reporting, it sounds like they're hoping they're not being singled out, but they're accepting the statement that this is something that's happening across the National Park Service, that these commissions are just being suspended for the transition. Let's talk about the Army Corps of Engineers. Speaking of federal agencies, the Army Corps of Engineers says they'd like to have like 6 acres of land for a solar installation. I think they want a private company to kind of handle that.
That's right. The Corps is talking about leasing some land near the canal to operate a solar array that would provide energy to their field office and also to the hurricane protection barrier out in New Bedford to help get a renewable source of energy to power those two installations. Currently, it's just kind of standard electricity out there, and it's about $250,000 a year to pay for that. So the Army Corps estimates that if they do this solar array, it could save about $180,000 annually. So it would be a pretty big savings for them on their electricity costs if it does go forward.
I didn't get a great sense of where they're talking about. Do you understand where exactly they want to put this?
My knowledge of that area is pretty limited, so I'm not entirely sure. It's known as the Midway property, so I'm sure someone out there knows and is wondering why we don't. But
well, we'll be talking about it more, I'm sure.
We will be. I mean, this is just the very first stage. I mean, they issued a notice to go, to sort of their environmental notice. They determined that it's not subject does not need an environmental impact statement, and that can be reviewed. So I'm sure there will be much more discussion about this going forward. But I don't have a great sense of the geography out there to know, exactly where they're talking about.
Okay. These projects, these solar projects, have been pretty well supported across the Commonwealth. Massachusetts is doing great with solar, but it they run into problems when they want to chop down large swaths of trees in order to create solar. So we've seen that issue rise up in Kitiwit most recently. So we'll keep an eye on this project and figure out what's going on there. Very nice story this week in the paper about a Greek gentleman who has spent his career repairing shoes and purses and all sorts. And I love this. I mean, these cobblers are such a piece of Americana of town, you know, when you could go down the street and buy a candle and get your shoe fixed. So he's retiring, I understand.
It is. Kostas Sempos, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, a Greek gentleman who is across the street from our office. So I think everyone at the Cape Cod Times has a shoe repaired by him over the years, is retiring. He's 72. He's closing his business, and he wants to work in the garden and teach his grandson to speak Greek. But he's been there for 41 years.
Wow.
The shop has been open. So, and he's the third in a chain of Greek cobblers to own it. So he's, you know, he's been there working his little shop for longer than, you know,
a lot of us have been alive. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. A lot of shoes. And it's funny. I just went in there. I didn't realize he was closing, trying to get a pair of shoes fixed, and he wouldn't do it because he said that they weren't worth fixing. I mean, he could have taken, you know, he's everyone here has walked over there to get a pair of shoes fixed. That's right across the street from the office. And, you know, he was an honest guy because he could have taken me for $10. What do I know the difference? And, you know, and he said, you know, you need new shoes. And then he just gave them back to me. You know, God bless his heart. So, so he'll be missed. I mean, there aren't many places to do that. You know, and a lot of people don't bother to try to get shoes fixed anymore. But if you do, you know, did have a repair, he was the place to go. So we're sorry to see him go here, but it's glad that he's going of his own volition and looking forward to some retirement.
Yeah, it was a nice story. And I also have a pair of shoes that he extended the life, probably doubled the life of. And really nice story. And Sean Driscoll, the Cape Cod Times, thanks for doing all that work on the town meetings and filling us in on what happened this week.
Thanks, Sean.
Okay. We spoke with Sam Houghton from the Mashpee Enterprise as well, Sarah Brown from the Vineyard Gazette, George Brennan from the Martha's Vineyard Times. We spoke with Tim Wood of the Cape Cod Chronicle and Ed Miller of the Provincetown Banner. I want to thank you for listening as we rounded up the local news stories of the week, or some of the better ones anyway. I'm Sean Corcoran. Thanks for listening.
The Friday News Roundup is produced by Sean Corcoran. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.